travel and preach. So soon after he took sannyas, he appeared in Bengal. Then he moved to Puri in Orissa on the east coast of India. And pretty much right after he was there, or soon after, he decided he wanted to travel and preach. And also on the excuse of trying to find his brother, because he had an older brother who had also taken sannyas and left. So on the excuse of looking for him, he said, I want to go to South India, he may be there. So he left and went traveling, and everywhere he went, he turned people into devotees of Krishna. He was such an attractive, because he's Krishna himself, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So naturally, he influenced a lot of people. But as was customary for traveling sannyasis, they would stay put for 4 months of the rainy season. Too hard to travel, rains all the time. So he chose to stay in Sri Rangam in South India. Sri Rangam is the largest temple in India. Largest, I think, in area, land size. And he stayed with the family of Bhatta, Vyankata Bhatta, and his brothers. They were priests of the temple. So they had important positions there, socially and religiously. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stayed there for 4 months. So, which is quite amazing, actually. If you read the biography of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you'll see who got 4 months of association with Lord Chaitanya, practically nobody. So these, and they were worshippers of Lord Narayan. They were from the Sri Sampradaya of Ramanujacharya. So that was their lineage. The temple was run by priests of that line, that disciplic succession. They worshipped Lord Narayan, or Lord Vishnu was the supreme personality of Godhead. And of course, Chaitanya is Krishna himself, and he came to bring specifically worship of Krishna, the lovable cowherd boy of Vrindavan, and devotion to him. So he converted the family, actually. They were very highly posted priests of the temple and higher ups in that lineage. But they became devotees of Krishna by the influence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So one of these three brothers, there was Vyankata Bhatta, Tirumala Bhatta, and Prabodhananda Bhatta, who later became Prabodhananda Saraswati. So he's the one who has written this, Chaitanya Chandramata, series of verses in glorification of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we're not going to chant it responsibly, it's a little difficult meter, but I'll just read through it. Kaivalyam narakayate tridashapura akasha pushpayate durdantendriya kala sarpa patali protkata dangstrayate vidhi mahendra disha kitayate vishwam purnam sukhayate yat karunya kataksha vaibhava vatam gauramevastu maha. And this is the translation. For a devotee, the pleasure, in other words, a devotee of Krishna, for a devotee, the pleasure of merging into the existence of Brahman is considered hellish. Similarly, he considers promotion to heavenly planets just another kind of phantasmagoria. The yogis meditate for sense control, but for the devotee, the senses appear like serpents with broken teeth. The whole material world appears joyful for a devotee. And even great personalities like Lord Brahma and Lord Indra are considered no better than insects. Such is the position of a devotee who has received but a small glance of the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Unto this most magnanimous personality, I offer my respectful obeisances. So Lord Chaitanya is Krishna in his most merciful appearance in this world. So he's being glorified here by Prabodhananda Saraswati. For allowing the devotee or blessing the devotee to have this high level of realization. What's stated in these different points that are brought out in this verse are general aspirations, at least of religious people. Religious people are dharmic people who follow some principles in life. They think of the afterlife, what they want to attain. They understand that this life is temporary, and that life should be used for something, to attain something, artha. There should be some desirable objective that I work toward. Of course, today, most people aren't even on that level. So Prabodhananda Saraswati doesn't even talk about people who have no objective in life except to eat, drink, and be merry and die. That's pretty much where people are today. And it's getting worse every day as time goes on. So he's addressing a higher standard of people, at least people that have some goal in life, some higher goal than just eat, drink, be merry, and die. So he begins this first point here, kaivalyam narakayate. So kaivalya, this is the goal of the impersonalist philosophers of India. If you ever read about a standard definition of Hinduism in a dictionary or encyclopedia, you'll often find that the goal of Hinduism is to merge with the One, to become one with the One, right? Or merge into the light, and so on. So that's one reason we don't like to call ourselves Hindus, because we don't align with that definition. That's not our goal. So he says, what does he say about it? Not only does he say, no, I don't want that. I don't want to merge into the oneness. What does it mean to merge into the One? It means that you lose your individual identity. You become, in a sense, that thing, which is everything. And in one sense, everything is sort of like nothing when you don't have your own personal identity. In fact, this philosophy is considered to be very close to Buddhist voidism. The Buddhist voidism is that everything ultimately is zero. Everything ultimately is nothing. There is no reality ultimately. One way they argue that is that, you know, everything is a moment. Everything is momentary. So what is a moment? A moment is just so fleeting, it's almost like it's not there. How long does a moment last? Can we measure it? No, so you go more and more and more. So an infinitely small moment, well, what is it? Then it becomes like nothing. It becomes like zero. Srila Prabhupada said, even in course, the Buddhist philosophy is in some ways an outgrowth of Indian Vedic philosophy. So the idea there, one of the approaches to this, understanding what is the reality, is to eliminate everything that's temporary, everything that we experience that's temporary. In Sanskrit, this is called neti neti, which means not this, not this. So you look around and you say, well, this body, obviously, it's not going to last forever. So not this. This is not the supreme truth. This is not the reality. Even this world, it's here now, it'll be gone. Everything. So many great kingdoms, so many great persons have come and gone. So Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say, so they keep saying minus, minus, not this, not this. Take this out, take this out. He says, you keep minusing enough, then you get to zero. Ultimately, you get to zero, you get to the void. This is the conclusion. So this philosophy of impersonalism, it's something like that. It's very close to it, because there's no sense of individual personality. There's just the all-pervading One. So Prabodhananda Saraswati, he says, this kaivalyam, actually the word kaivalya means one, or only. Some of you you're familiar with Harinam, 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 Eva, Kevalam. The only means of deliverance in this age is only one thing, chanting the names of the Lord. So kaivalyam means kevala, one thing. This one, this emerging into the One, what does he say about it? Narakayate, it's like hell. Now, what's amazing about this is the impersonalist philosophers who want to attain that, they think it's a very desirable thing. Now, of course, part of the reason for this is because there's so much suffering in this world. And we analyze it psychologically as a kind of spiritual suicide. There's so much suffering, I just want to extinguish myself. Sometimes people say, why did God create me anyway? I didn't ask to be created. I'm suffering so much, I didn't ask to be created. So let me extinguish myself. This merging is something like that. So, of course, this is completely opposite to what the devotee wants, because the devotee wants to serve Krishna eternally and love Krishna eternally. If you love someone, then naturally you want to be with that person. So we keep this duality always. There's myself and there's Krishna. And there's an exchange of love between us. And in fact, this is the essence of reality. This is really what exists. It's called Bhakti, Bhagavan, and Bhakta. So Bhagavan is God, Bhakta is the devotee of God, and Bhakti is the exchange between them, the love. Sometimes it's said God is love, right? Well, very common expression, God is love. So in some sense, yes, that's true. He's love, but he's also he's a lovable person and a loving person. He's a person, ultimately. But he's so saturated and infused with love and so concerned with love. That's what makes him tick, you might say. That actually he loves his devotees so much that one of his greatest qualities, actually sometimes it's listed as his greatest quality, is bhakta vatsyata. That means he's controlled by his devotees' love. There's a famous set of verses in the ninth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam where actually Lord Vishnu is speaking to the sage Durvasa Muni. And he says, I have no independence. I respond only to what my devotees want. They're in control. That's really love. That's really love. To fulfill the desire of the beloved, that's true love. So God is like that. He's the best of everything. So he's also the best lover and the best servant of those who approach him. So devotees always want to keep that separation between themselves. They don't want to merge into Krishna. Prabhupada, sometimes compared this sometimes. It's just like if the child thinks, Mommy, I want to go back inside you. I feel safe and comfortable there. Of course, it's not safe and comfortable, obviously. We hear from the Bhagavatam. So this is kind of a crazy idea, warped psychology. So Prabodhananda Saraswati, he thinks the same. This is crazy. This is like hell. How could I think of being separated from Krishna for eternity? No, I don't want that. Kaivalyam narakayate. Actually, in our scriptures, in religious scriptures, the main scriptures around the world, there's always a conception of hell, right? And what is it? It's suffering. It's pictured in different ways, maybe it can be taken metaphorically sometimes. But we know that it's horrible suffering. And it lasts a long, long time. Even if it's temporary, as it's described in Srimad Bhagavatam, it seems like eternity. So, the Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur, he says, this is hell, this merging into Krishna. So this is the first point that he makes here. So then he says, Tridasha Pura Akasha Pushpayate. So this is another aspiration of people. One thing you'll see here, that these are the aspirations or the goals of, we have broad categories of how you can place everyone in this world. So first of all are the Vikarmis. Those are the people that I mentioned who have no real goal in life. They just want to eat, drink, and be merry. And then the Karmis. The Karmis are those who actually, they want to attain heaven. They have this idea that there's this heavenly place, a paradise, and they want to go there. Of course, we have the Judeo-Christian conception of it, and they may think it's eternal. But from the Vedic, we use the word as it's actually a temporary place. Sometimes the word is actually, it's called sometimes amara, which means a place where you never die. But it just seems that way because it lasts such a long time, lasts a very long time. But eventually, when the results of your good deeds, your piety, run out, you've used up your reward card, then you have to come back down to this plane of existence. But there are, so those are called the karmis. And then there's the yogis and the jnanis. They're interested in this kaivalyam especially. And the yogis, of course, they do it in different ways. The jnanis are more about philosophical speculation and studying the Vedas and Vedanta and so on. And the yogis, of course, they perform their asanas. The yogis understand that as long as I act, there's going to be karma. So they are a step above the karmis. They understand that as long as I act, there's going to be reactions to that. So they try to stop it by meditation. Of course, that's really difficult to do. As we all know, try to control the mind. We'll hear a little bit more about the yogis coming up. So anyway, so the karmis, they follow Vedic guidance, and they want to attain that heavenly place. They want to go there. And they may even be under the illusion that it will last forever, but it doesn't last forever. You have to read the fine print in the contract. You'll find out it doesn't last forever. So Tridarshapur, that's what that means. Tridarsha means 30. Sometimes the Prabhupada said this is like shorthand because it sometimes said there are 33 million demigods. And there are various heavenly abodes that you can go to where they administrate what's going on there. So what does Prabodhananda Saraswati say about these heavenly planets? Akasha Pushpayate. Akasha means the sky, and Pushpayate means flowers. So he said they're just like flowers growing in the sky, these heavenly planets. In other words, as Prabhupada would use the word, phantasmagoria. Now they are actually real, but because they're temporary, the devotee doesn't take them as substantial. They're like a dream, kind of. You may enjoy in a dream, but eventually you have to wake up. So you have this pleasant, long-term, 10,000-year dream in the heavenly planets, but then you have to wake up and come back. So it's like there are other examples of this idea of things that aren't real. Just there are, for example, it's sometimes said in Vedic philosophy to explain something that's not real. It's said the horns of a rabbit. And there's another one in Bengal, they talk about the eggs of a horse. So all of these things are, well, they may sound good, but, you know, it's not a real thing. So the heavenly planets, in fact, it's said that in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, don't be distracted by the flowery glorification of the heavenly planets. You get the flowers, but you won't get the fruit you're looking for. The flowers don't turn into fruit ultimately. The ultimate fruit that you're looking for, full satisfaction of the soul, full satisfaction of the self, you won't get it there, it won't be fulfilled. So the devotee rejects that. He rejects merging, he rejects the heavenly planets. Then Durdan Tendriya Kalasapra Patari Prukata Dangstayate. So it says, I'll read this translation again. The yogis meditate for sense control, but for the devotee, the senses appear like serpents with broken teeth. So as I said, the yogis, they're trying to control themselves. It's about self-control. For any of these attainments, self-control is needed. Actually, even in ordinary life, everyone knows there has to be some self-control. We teach our children, you have to control yourself. You have to study, sit down and study. You can't just play all the time. You have to go to school and so on. If you want to get a college degree, an advanced degree, you have to apply yourself. So self-control is necessary. So the yogis, they're trying to control themselves completely, stopping all their movements and stopping all that, especially the senses and the mind are always agitating. So difficult to control, to stop the mind. Because the mind is so many desires, and these desires force us to act in this world, which brings reactions, many, often not good reactions. So the devotees are trying to control their senses, and their senses are compared to snakes with poisonous teeth. So naturally, a snake with poisonous teeth is very fearsome, scary. I'm scared of all snakes, even your garter snakes. So, but especially if you know it's a point, you see a rattlesnake or a cobra raise its hood, you're going to be scared. So the idea is that the yogis, they're afraid of their senses, in a sense. They want to control their senses because they know these senses are my enemy. This mind is my enemy because it keeps me caught up in this world. But what does it say? What does Prabodhananda Saraswati says? He says, for a devotee, the senses are like a poisonous snake that just went to the dentist and had all his teeth removed. No, they can just gum you. They can't bite you and hurt you or poison you. So that's why does he say that? What's the idea? The idea is that the devotees don't, it's not a hard struggle. Of course, it's not that it's easy, of course, to control your senses. But we have some way, we can engage the senses. We can use them. The senses want to do something. The mind wants to do something. It's active by nature, or the soul is active by nature, and it's powering the senses and the mind. So what do? We engage them in the service of Krishna, which is a completely different thing than engaging them in fulfilling our own desires for gratification in this world. Whatever our desires are, whatever ways, we have so many ways that are actually, prajahati yada kaman sarvan parthamano gatan. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that our mind is always coming up with new plans. Oh, that didn't work? try this. Of course, what we find is all over the world, everything has been tried multiple times, an infinite number of times, but nobody's satisfied in the material world. Everybody still wants something else. You may be a billionaire, but 1 billion is not enough. You need at least 10 times that, because you have to compete with the other guy. You want to be on top of the list of the world's richest person. So nobody is satisfied with the fame and so many things that may inspire us. So the mind is always coming up with these things, and the senses are always agitating us. But when you serve Krishna, you become peaceful. There's a nice verse, how does that go? Anyway, I won't try to remember the Sanskrit, but it says the senses are like masters demanding, practically whipping me. And I'm always trying to serve them like a humble servant. Yes, nose, yes, tongue, yes, ears, yes. Whatever you want, I'll give you that. Whatever food you want to eat, I'll give you that. Whatever you need, I'll serve you. But what does it say? They never give up. Natrapa no pashanti. They never give any peace. It's like adding fuel to the fire. That's what happens. But serving Krishna, you become peaceful. Why? Because that's the truth. That's the reality. That's why. That's what we're meant for. That's why it makes us peaceful and satisfied. Because that's what we're meant for. That's why we exist, to reciprocate with Krishna. And we're subordinate by nature, that we can't deny. This whole material world is forcing us to do so many things. We can't even control what happens to our own body. It's dying, aging right before our eyes. So Prabhupada used to complain about these yogis that come to the West and tell us all that we're God. So what kind of God gets a toothache and so on? There's no satisfaction in following a philosophy like that. Satisfaction comes from engaging our senses in the service of Krishna. That's what they're meant for. So this is what Prabodhananda Saraswati, he says. For the devotee, it's not such a big problem. You engage your senses in the service of Krishna, then you'll be happy and satisfied. Actually, so many devotees experience that. Many, especially in the early days of the Hare Krishna movement, so many devotees went very quickly, you can say, from one extreme to the other. Of course, many had Prabhupada's association early, so that was inspiring. But they would think, I remember I had this experience myself when I came. I was convinced very quickly, practically the first time I went to the temple, that this is the truth. I need to do this. And I thought, boy, it looks like it's going to be really hard, the way these people live, you know, so austerely and so on. But when I started practicing, I said, actually, it's really nice. It's very enjoyable. So many wonderful things. The life of Krishna consciousness is so wonderful. Prabhupada used to say, we have the best of everything. What is not to be happy about? So why? Because we are engaging our senses in the service of Krishna, and Krishna reciprocates. Yes, you've come to me. I've been waiting for you for so long. So chant and be happy, Prabhupada said. Chant Hare Krishna, you'll be happy. Chanting, of course, is the first service. Or maybe the first service is hearing, as you're all doing now. This is service to Krishna, devotional service, shravanam, hearing about Krishna and Krishna's philosophy. Then chanting and so on, all these different kinds of ways of serving Krishna. So that's how we engage our senses. And it's important also to do practical service. Just like Mukhya Prabhu, she's encouraging people to, you know, give something to support the temple, because we're taking advantage. We're able to come here and see the beautiful deities and chant and so on, take prasadam. But they also, their practical service, the temple, you know, requires services in different ways. So it's a very good thing to commit oneself to a particular service. Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Samadukha sukam dhiram nyomitatvaya kalpate. You get freedom from the suffering of this world if you engage in devotional service, indirectly is what he's saying, by no matter what happens. Samadukha sukam dhiram. Dhira means to be steady and determined. So if you take on a particular service, then, oh, I have to do this. You know, I'm cooking for Krishna, the 6 o'clock offering or whatever, well, I can't just say, no, I don't feel like it today. No, you have to do it. You may not feel like doing it that way. Or, of course, if you're sick or something, you get it covered, but it's your responsibility. That service is your responsibility. So you take on some responsibility and do service to Krishna. And, of course, that's very much appreciated. And, of course, it's done through the medium of the spiritual master. Srila Prabhupada set up his whole institution to provide so many areas of service for people to engage in practical service to Krishna. So getting back to this, if you engage your senses in the service of Krishna, then they're not, you know, powerful enemies that you can't overcome. You can become happy and peaceful by engaging in the service of Krishna. So the next one here, Vidhi Mahendra Jis Chakitayate. I heard some chuckles when it said here. It said, even great personalities like Lord Brahma and Lord Indra are considered no better than insects. So, of course, Brahma is the highest being in the universe, and Lord Indra, he's the controller of the heavenly planet. So they're very, very great personalities. So we don't demean them, and we don't want to diminish them. But the idea here is that as long as you have a material body in this world, then that's not a desirable position. Whether you're in the body of an insect or you're in the body of, you know, the greatest person in the universe, ultimately you want to get out of this material world and go to Krishna, serve Krishna in your Satchitananda Rupa, in your spiritual form, and associate. Actually, the devotee Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he prays Kita Janmahao Yata Tu Adas. He says, I don't really mind if I take birth as an insect, as long as it's a devotee insect. Hare Krishna devotee insect, that's okay. And I'm born in the house of devotees and I get to serve Krishna. So that's ultimately, of course, when you're on that level of realization, it doesn't matter what body you're in because you're transcendental to the body. So that's the idea here. That's why he says, you know, any material body in this world, whether it's the highest or the lowest, then I'm not attracted to that. And then he says, Vishvam Purna Sukhayati. Now this is quite shocking, actually. What he says is, for the devotee, he's talking about the devotee. Actually, he's talking about the devotee who has received the blessings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yat karunya kataksha. Kataksha means a glance, and karunya means mercy. Anyone who has received the merciful glance of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, that can come in many, many different ways. It comes especially through the empowered acharya, the empowered spiritual master who's delivering the message of Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and actually received it, taking it in. So one who has that kind of person has these realizations. So this last one is Vishvam Purna Sukhayate. It means that devotee sees the whole world is full of happiness. It's only happy. Or you can say this devotee, realized devotee, is happy in any situation. For him, the material world is the spiritual world. Prabhupada himself sometimes said like that. He said, actually, for the devotee, because he's seeing Krishna everywhere, then he's always in the spiritual world. This, of course, is a high level. We practice that. We have different ways we hear so that we can look around this world and try to remember Krishna. But Krishna is actually, this is all Krishna's energy. In fact, it's said in the scripture that because this is his energy, and we're experiencing Krishna all the time. Just as if you're in the sunshine, then you're experiencing the sun in some sense. In fact, we just in common speech, we may say, you know, open up the blinds and let the sun in. Well, the sun's not going to come in your room, but the sunshine is. So in one sense, the sunshine and the sun are one. They're identical. So we're actually in the rays of Krishna now. The whole Brahman, it said, Sarvam Kalabidam Brahma. Brahma is the name for the Supreme Absolute Truth. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna. But an aspect of him is the rays of his body. And from that, the transformation of those rays, then, or transformation of Krishna's, and Krishna has different energies. So one of his energies is this material energy. This material world comes from Krishna. So we're actually in the aura, you might say, of Krishna, but we're not experiencing it. But the pure devotee, he experiences it. He cannot experience it. He only experiences Krishna. because of his devotion to Krishna. He has love because of his love for Krishna. He sees Krishna always. Prabhupada gave the nice example, even if we see the things of this world to help remind us. Bhagavad Gita, we get different hints, like we can say Krishna is the sun, one of the eyes. They're like the sun during the day is always looking down at us. You can say, oh, that's Krishna's eye. Krishna's looking down at me. Or the moon, now we have the full moon. So that's one of Krishna's eyes. So he's looking down. So you're reminded of Krishna in different aspects of the material world. But and also Prabhupada gave the example, it's just like when the mother sees the shoe of her child, then she, what does she think of? She doesn't think of shoe, she thinks of whatever the child's name is. That's what she thinks of immediately. Immediately. So for the pure devotee on a high level of realization, everything reminds him or her of Krishna, and the feelings of love are coming out always. So that's the idea. I thought I'd cover some of these points, important points of our philosophy, kind of an overview of different ways that people see this world and different aspirations they have, and how the devotee discards all of those and wants only to love and serve Krishna eternally. Hare Krishna. So anybody like to ask something or add something? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. Thank you for the wonderful class. So you mentioned that during the Prabhupada's, when Prabhupada was there personally, like during his, with his association, people jumped from so high. And then after Prabhupada left this planet, how did, I would like to ask you, how did you try to maintain that level of...
Well, one thing is, no, we... You can think in different ways about these very early devotees, especially that had very close association with Prabhupada. And one way we might think is that, in fact, Prabhupada sometimes mentioned things like that. But these devotees were continuing from previously. They, you know, it's very possible that these devotees already had an association with Srila Prabhupada. So he was calling them back. There's a story that one devotee, Prabhupada, when he saw him at Morning Star Ranch, he said, have you forgotten what you're supposed to be doing? So, and he would sometimes say that, that you have all been set by my spiritual master. You were formerly, in fact, he said, this was in London one time at the manor. He says, you were all formerly associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then you've come to, he has sent you, or my Guru Maharaj has sent you to assist me in my mission. So, in ways that we can think in this way and think highly of these new devotees that were able to get that association. Sometimes we may think, oh, if I only had that, gee, I'd be so advanced now. But as Prabhupada often pointed out, physical association is not everything. It's important, and of course you can get great association from it. Even for a moment, association with someone on Srila Prabhupada's level has great power. But also, we can't diminish what Prabhupada left behind, you can say. Even sometimes, even a great person materially, they leave and then people, it's like their presence is still felt. They're powerful personalities. And they infuse a place with a certain feeling and so on. And when they leave, it sort of hangs around, you might say. So Srila Prabhupada, obviously, what he left was spiritual. And it is coming through in so many different ways. All of the, as I was saying, Prabhupada gave us so many ways to serve him. So in all of those ways, he's present. These are the gifts that he has given us. He's present in these eternal gifts that he has given us. So really, actually I was hearing recently a lecture on a guru disciple, and the devotee was emphasizing, he was quoting, I forget where it was from, but he was saying it may have been the Hari Bhakti Vilas, that more emphasis is given on the qualification of the disciple than of the spiritual master. So, I mean, we could also see this in Prabhupada. He tried as hard as he could. He gave everything, 100%. He was so willing to give his time, even in an old age. Sometimes I think of this, you know, how Prabhupada was, you know, an elderly man, and he had not been healthy, but he was so open, always ready to speak to people in any situation and encourage them. And so forgiving of disciples that, you know, really offended him in different ways. So, but Srila Prabhupada, he, you know, the imprint that he left in his movement and in this world is still present there. Right? Indelible ink, the tattoo. Prabhupada tattooed the world with Krishna's name and so many things, service to Krishna. So it's still present. You can't get it off, right? You have a tattoo, it's hard. You may transform it, maybe. Sometimes people do that. So still, Prabhupada made an indelible mark in this world, and we can take advantage. This was, you can say, sometimes Prabhupada would emphasize certain things that, you know, he would want to make a point. And this would be, you know, his emphasis would be, take advantage because everything is there. Everything is there. I've given you everything. Like he said, everything is in my books. And he establishes society, so many opportunities. So we can feel the same closeness to Srila Prabhupada. And there's nothing wrong with that, even if we're initiated by one of Srila Prabhupada's disciples. In fact, Srila Prabhupada himself said the good. So for those who are not direct disciples of Prabhupada or grand disciples, Prabhupada said, the grandfather is more merciful than the father. And he said, if you please, you serve me faithfully, your grandfather, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, will bless you 1,000 times more than I can, he said. So you can get more mercy than I can as a direct disciple of Srila Prabhupada, according to the statement of Srila Prabhupada, by serving Srila Prabhupada's disciple and representative. So it's a nice thought. You're not missing because Prabhupada is no longer present here. You don't have to be his direct disciple. You can be his disciple of his disciple, and as the grandfather, Param Guru, he will shower his blessings on you if you faithfully serve his devoted son.
I was thinking the way you presented the class is very nice, very attractive. That Kaivalyam, in the beginning you were explaining, if I don't have my individuality, who is experiencing whether I am happy or blended in, or how do you...
I have no idea. It's something I think about, actually. What is the experience of Brahman? In one sense, you can't... There is no experience, because according to their own philosophy, there's only one. So there's not experience and experiencer and a thing to be experienced. There's only one thing, whatever you want to, name you want to put on it. So you really can't have... To have experience means duality, but there is no duality. There are many paradoxes, or you might call them outright contradictions, in the philosophy of monism. They don't make sense, actually. There's a story I heard that one of the Prabhupada's editors was editing something, and he went to Prabhupada for some... He said, Prabhupada, I'm reading what you're writing about the Mayavad philosophy here, but I don't understand it. And Prabhupada said, that's very good. It doesn't make any sense. So that's why you don't understand it. So that's really it. It's really hard to understand what it could possibly be, you know, to merge. And of course, you don't actually become that thing. They think that you become Brahman, but you don't. You go just as a drop of water goes into the ocean. It doesn't become the ocean. It's still, you know, one molecule of H2O is still there. So it's a kind of illusion, actually. But, it's a result of frustration, really, ultimately. I don't like this personhood. It caused me so many problems. Now my wife hates me, and even my dog barks at me, and you know, it's the material world. So many problems with being a person. So let me get rid of this. You know, Prabhupada speaks of this in one purport in Bhagavad Gita, especially. Vitaragabhayapurukrodha. So, yeah, we can't really figure it out because it doesn't make any sense.
Thank you. Any other comment, question, reflection, feedback?
I was just wondering, Prabhu, Prabodhananda Saraswati, how is he related to Gopal Bhatta Goswami?
He's his spiritual master. Yeah, I forgot to mention that, actually.
Gopal
Bhatta was the son of one of the three brothers, Venkata Bhatta. So Prabodhananda Saraswati was his uncle, and he's his spiritual master, actually. He's listed directly as his spiritual master. This, I was just reading something about him, and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says this, so that's good enough authority for me. He says this in one purport, a commentary in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, in that context. So yes, Gopal Bhatta Goswami was the direct disciple of Prabodhananda Saraswati.
On Vrindavan Parikram, I think it was 1995, we went to the lake where Prabodhananda Saraswati meditated.
Uh-huh.
And I'll never forget that. Yeah. But I didn't know very much about him.
One of the most, maybe the most, well, there are a couple of famous books. This Chaitanya Chandramata is famous, is that this verse comes from. But he wrote a book about Vrindavan, full of praise of Vrindavan. Really what you might call fanatical glorification of Vrindavan. Like anybody who wants to live anywhere else is just insane. That's sort of like the purport of his his glorification of Vrindavan. And he also wrote a book called Radha Rasa Shuddha Nidhi, about a glorification of Srimati Radharani. So he was a very, very high, very highly elevated devotee, rasic devotee, enjoying internally the divine pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Actually, he's one of the Ashtasakhis, Tungavidya, one of the eight closest gopi assistants of Srimati Radharani. All right, we'll stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Work, you know, I see you across the room.
The bar came on.